Hello, everyone. Welcome to another fantastic episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. Yes, we are lighthearted here on Fish Fry, for the most part. We like our smart forks that tell us when we should stop eating, our 3D printed robots that make pancakes with the faces of famous people, and our Kickstarter campaigns that are in search of alien life. And no, I didn't donate to that one. But yes, that is all fine and dandy. But sometimes we have to talk about more serious stuff. When safety and security is mandate, when failure is life or death, when finding bugs doesn't mean just your job is on the line. Please welcome Quentin Osham from AdaCore. Quentin and I are talking about what Spark can do that C cannot, and all about the software development and verification issues that you might run into in your next autonomous car design. Let's go. Hi, Quentin. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Amelia.
Okay, so first off, Quentin, can you give my audience a quick update on what AdaCore is all about?
Okay, so AdaCore is a provider for software tools. We provide things such as compilers, development environments, verification tools, static analysis, testing, and so on and so forth for the industry that has strong safety, security, reliability requirements that includes aerospace and defense, medical devices, automotive, and so on and so forth. We believe strongly in one programming language in particular, which is called the Ada programming language. So most of our tools revolve around this language, although we also support other languages such as C and C++, because we recognize that you seldom have just one language in a system and you need sort of coherent environment for the entire software development workshop.
So we are here to talk about autonomous and automated driving this week, where software development and verification is tantamount. Now, I can imagine that there are a lot of software-related challenges here. But, Quentin, what do you see are the biggest hurdles as AdaCore sees it?
Well, there's a big difference between coding or developing a software as a programmer, if you will, let's say something like a web server or an application that would not necessarily need any specific safety concern, and developing an application which failure may be the difference between life and death of human beings. And definitely, if you look at the car industry today, as it is the case for other industries such as avionics or railway, software bugs can be on the path to catastrophic events. So you're not in a place where you can just patch the code when you see a crash. You are in a place where you need to prevent as much as you can any possible problem. And doing so removes a lot of the emphasis of the responsibility from the specific coding and programming activity, if you will, to specification on one end and verification on the other end. So you need to spend a lot of time describing what you actually intend the software to do. And then you spend a huge amount of time verifying that what the software does is actually what it was meant to do. And again, to reach very, very high level of safety up to situations where you're almost certain that there is no bugs, you need to deploy an humongous amount of effort there, which, you know, sometimes brings the productivity of the development team down to maybe one line of code per engineer per day. On a good day, I can write 200 myself if I don't have any of those constraints. So that gives you sort of the idea of the order of magnitude between regular development and this kind of development. So this is extremely expensive. That's extremely painful. And you spend a lot of time doing, you know, testing in particular. So anything that can help reducing those costs is very welcome, is absolutely fundamental. It turns out that many environments out there, many software environments out there, were built without safety considerations. So if you take a language like the C language, when the language was initially designed, it was designed to essentially provide a portable assembly language or developer, which was already a huge step forward at the time, but one of the main design principles of the C language was that the responsibility of safety is on the hands of the developer, and the language should be as flexible as possible and essentially let them do whatever that they want as easily as possible. Now, this is great if you indeed don't have any safety requirements, you're going to be able to go very fast. But if you do have safety requirements, and if the software that you are developing is responsible for the safety of people, I don't want to be trusted as a developer, right? I want the environment, I want the language, I want the tool to be as helpful and constraining as possible to point out my mistakes. This is where I would say the biggest hurdle lies, is managing to reach those very high level of safety within environments that have not necessarily been designed for that purpose, which is the reason why we push the kind of technology that we're pushing, which have been designed initially to tackle down those kind of problematics.
Now, you guys just entered into a partnership with NVIDIA in this realm. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, that's absolutely fascinating. NVIDIA came to us a few years ago and they told us that they were entering the automotive market. They have platforms out there for automotive purposes. And as a result, they are seeing this new safety requirements that I was describing before. And of course, like many other companies in the semiconductor domain, obviously, they have a strong C culture, but they realize that while they could reach those level of safety with their current software workshop, there could be other ways to be more effective and maybe to reach even higher level of safety that they would have been able to reach otherwise. So they were looking at solutions out there. They were not particularly interested in ADA in the first place. They were just looking at alternatives. And I remember when we started to discuss, they told me that, yeah, ADA is nice, but ADA is just another programming language. Now, the reason why we started to work with them and investigate the possibility of partnering together is the fact that ADA comes with something called Spark. And Spark is a subset, fairly large subset of the ADA programming language. But while the ADA programming language, although designed for safety, is still a general purpose programming language, the Spark subset has been constrained to a subset that is fit for static analysis. That's quite important. That means that if you develop in Spark, you develop with a language that is static analysis tool friendly. And the consequence of that is that a lot of problems that are undecidable on a general purpose language like C or even ADA becomes decidable with Spark. So let's look at what you could do for C with static analysis. Using the tools out there, what they're going to tell you is that I found X bugs on your application, please go fix them. So the only thing that those tools can tell you is you have bugs, go fix them. And there are a lot of places that where they just don't know. That's not because the tools are bad. Those tools are absolutely fantastic and amazing, but they are working on a language that has not been made to help their task, and as a result, there are a lot of questions they can't answer. If you work with Spark, and if you use the Spark tools, you're not going to look for bugs anymore. You are going to look for guarantees of absence of certain categories of bugs. And something that is extremely difficult and tedious to do with C, like, for example, demonstrating absence of buffer overflow, to take one example that is quite common in the safety or security breaches we hear about, it becomes extremely easy. I don't want to say trivial, but close to trivial, to demonstrate in Spark that there are no such a thing. It's an extremely strong result. I don't have buffer overflow, and I can get this result with relatively mild amount of effort. Now, from there, you can then go to the next step, which is impossible to do with the C-based tool static analysis, which is, okay, now I managed to demonstrate those simple stuff. Let's go one step further and start defining additional properties on my code. You know, sort of key properties, like we call them pre and post conditions, if you want to define the behavior of functions and things like that. And you're going to be able, with Spark, to formally, statically, mathematically demonstrate that, yes, the source code is compliant with that specific property expressed, that specific post condition. A very simple example, you want to make sure that every open on the file is followed by a close, so you can write the contract as to verify that every single open indeed corresponds to, you know, a close at some point. And this two things. Brings you to a place where, while on a traditional methodology, you would do a lot of testing, with all the complication of testing that you might think of, in particular, the fact that sometimes it's very impractical to test certain things, and the fact that testing, no matter how much you test, you always test a subset of the possibility. With Spark and the formal proof, the properties that you're going to check, whether those are simple properties such as absence of buffer overflow, or complex properties such as functional-like properties, you will formally verify them statically in all possible contexts. It's not a subset anymore, it's the all possible inputs you will know whether or not you're safe or not. And again, if I compare Ada and Spark and how that would attract a company like NVIDIA or many others actually that we can't talk about yet, is the idea that changing the way we develop software, if you will, to a process that puts a lot more emphasis and capabilities on the developer desk to make this very strong verification claim.
All right, Quentin, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I know you've been on Fish Fry before, but I don't believe I've ever asked you this question. So, you have one meal left on planet Earth. That's it for the rest of your life. What would it be?
Okay, so as you know, as my accent may have told already, I'm coming from France, so food is something that is quite important to me. I'm sort of a snob in this regard, which I guess comes from my passport. And the one meal that I would get is, without a shade of a doubt, a coq au vin, which is, you know, this slow-cooked roaster that you get in the wine sauce with the little carrots, you have little onions, the mushrooms and stuff like that, and you let it cook for like a day or two before the sauce really penetrates in the meat, and that would definitely be the thing I'd select.
That is a great answer, Quentin, and I think that's the first coq au vin answer on Fish Fry. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me yet again, Quentin.
Sure, thank you.
And now it's time for a little news you may have missed. Super Tiny Radar Edition. Now, when you think of your standard radar setup, what comes to mind? Probably the opposite of a matchbox, right? Well, a team of researchers from VTT Technical Research Center in Finland and KAUST, King Abdullah University of Science and Industry, have created a super small new radar system that, get this, weighs just over 5 ounces and is powered by a 5-volt battery. So this new radar system can detect and track a person walking from 39 feet all the way up to 65 feet. And not only is the size of this new radar system a big deal, or a small deal, I guess, but also the type of radar it uses. This prototype actually uses what is called frequency-modulated continuous wave radar, which means it produces pulses of radio waves of varying frequencies that can detect small-scale changes. With the help of 1 transmitting and 2 receiving antennae, this team from VTT and KAUST got their new matchbox-sized radar system up to 8 scans per second while running at an operating frequency of 24 gigahertz. Now, that isn't exactly powerful enough for large-scale military use, but for smaller, more portable designs like drones or guidance systems for vision-impaired people, this new radar system might be a complete game changer. Super cool, right? Now, if you want to read a white paper called Compact Millimeter Wave FMCW Radar Implementation and Performance Analysis, or if you want to check out a video of this new radar technology in action, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. And speaking of EE Journal, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by me. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to EE Journal and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, I love that stuff, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com. For the week of April 26, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.